Succession number 19935, Reel 3.
Jim Wilkes, Reel 3. Can you tell me more about these Japanese snipers up in the trees?
Well, we couldn't see them, obviously, so all we could do were let go with bursts in the trees, you know. Eventually, we got them. But, of course, we lost one or two of ours at the same time, you know. But that was one place I didn't like. Well, as I say, the sniper were up in the trees, both sides of the airstrip. You couldn't see them. In fact, they used to tie themselves up in the tree. So all we could do, we were all advancing down the airstrip, approximately 5 yards apart, you know, spread out. And all we did as we were walking along, we'd spray the trees with, you know, automatic fire. And eventually that cleared it, and then the planes would start coming in again. The old Dakota.
So there were just bodies left hanging up in the trees?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I wouldn't know. If we know they were there, you see, when we did get a Jap body, we had to search them, and any diary, maps or anything like that, we had to hand in for intelligence, you see. So, to be honest, we didn't leave them, no. But, we were supposed to hand everything in, but obviously we didn't.
What did the troops like to keep?
Well, if you had a damn good watch on or something like that. Not that I did. The only thing I kept, and I lost them when I got wounded myself. One of my own blokes pinched them off me, so that's another story.
What type of possessions would a Japanese soldier have on him?
Well, for instance, I still have one somewhere, of the kind of a Japanese flag, silk flag. When I got wounded, I had chopsticks and one or two of bits and bats. But while I was laid there wounding myself, somebody pinched them off me, like so. But, you know, you weren't supposed to keep anything at all, like. But obviously, knowing the British Tommy, he did.
What did you think to Japanese?
Well, no doubt about it, he was a brave man. But on the other hand, it was an animal, the treatment of our prisoner of war, wasn't it? I must say, look at Jack Hammond, who I've quoted. This Jap found him, bayoneted him 5 times in the chest, emptied his water bottle. So, what sort of animal is that? You know. And as we all know, the treatment of the prisoner of war by the Japs. You see, my brother was a prisoner of war on the railway, but he didn't come back.
Did you ever take Japanese prisoners?
We only ever took one. This is what I say. You couldn't fault the Japanese for being brave or stupid, I don't know which. We only ever got one, and he didn't know what day it was. He was wandering about. We once went out for one. He was wandering about. He didn't look to have a rifle or anything on him. And so we went to pick him up. And when he saw us coming, he just pulled a pin out of a grenade and blew himself up before he'd be taken prisoner. So what can you do with an enemy like that?
So this Japanese you did capture, you mean he was bewildered?
He didn't know what day it was, no. And he'd no weapons at all. So, in fact, we gave him a cigarette. Well, as I say, I didn't smoke. Not then. And I don't know, I think we must be stupid, us. They gave him cigarettes, and he had a slight wound in his arm, and bandaged him up. And if that had been one of us with Japs, it probably used us for bayonet practice. But then, that was a British soldier.
Uh, And you say you were doing this job for several months?
Well, out there. It's not bad, but yeah, oh yeah, 7 months. Yeah.
This is the advance from Mactilla, was it?
Well, from Mactilla, eventually when the airship was secure, and that, they decided to fly us in somewhere else and drop us there in the middle of it. And I can't remember what the name of that place, but they flew us in there and dropped us there. Can't remember the name of that place, what life in me. But we're in the thick of it there, and this is where the funny part about it came in. Another funny incident. We were up this big hill, Cud, as I say we call them. And as I say, we had mules with no transport, of course, in Injun Hill. We dug in up this hill, and the following morning, I also remember his name, our platoon commander was Lieutenant Gallon. We decided we're moving off this big hill to go somewhere else. Now, for a mule, you've got to have two loads, one for each side. Well, this particular day, nobody knows how it came about, there was an odd load. And when I talk about a mule load, I'm talking about 89 blankets wet through and 89 ground sheets wet through. Of course, we had no tents or anything like that, you just covered yourself up with your monsoon kit, see. So anyway, there's this odd mule load, all tied up, rolled up, 89 blankets wet through, 89, so a fair bit of weight. So this Lieutenant Gallon, he turns round to me, he says, when we move off Wilkes, you'll fix that mule load. I looked at him and I looked at the mule load. I looked at all the stuff I had, packed, Remington magazines, I had a rifle then, rifle. So anyway, they moved off. And I couldn't get it on my shoulder. It was on the floor, and I couldn't pick it up. Every time I tried to pick it up, my rifle dropped off my shoulder. Anyway, a lad in my section called Gaffney, remember his name, no? Newcastle lad, he turned around and he says, I'll give you a hand, Wilkie, lad, come on. And so we're carrying this mule load down between us. And this is what sort of an officer this Gallon was. He turned round, and he saw Gaffney helping me. And he says to Gaffney, Gaffney, I told Wilkes to carry that, get back to your section. Now, what sort of officer is that? Anyway, I still couldn't get it up on my shoulder. So they set off in front of me, down this big hill. So I started rolling it down the hill. The damn thing got stuck between two trees. And could I just get it out? So I thought, oh, sod it. So tracked on behind the rest of the platoon. 2 hours after we get right down to the bottom, this Lieutenant Gallon turns round, sees me. He says, where's that mule load, Wilkes? I said, well, it's up top of bloody hill where it's stopping as far as I'm concerned. Open the rest. But he sent two men up for it. Not one, two. Anyway, I was under open the rest. And a bit, a while after that, we pulled back a little bit somewhere. I was up in front of the CO or somebody. And I got what they called then, I'm sure they called it this, 14 days field punishment. Which meant to say that I had to stand down in the morning. Had to go report to the RSM and a double round this paddy field for an hour with a pack on and everything, rifle pack. Had to double round this paddy field for a bloody hour. RSM, Jim Maloney, another nice fella, he more or less apologised to me, saying, more or less said, I'm sorry. He didn't actually say it, but he didn't really want to make me do it. But this Lieutenant Gallon were watching, so he had to make me double down this battlefield. But that was one officer that I thought wasn't fit to be called an officer.
Was he deliberately trying to victimise you?
I don't think so. But what was the point in an officer making one man try to carry it when two men were carrying it? I couldn't understand the mentality of it at all. all the other officers I met were pretty fair, like, you know. Anyway, I got this 14 days punishment, like, you know, and then later on, when we went back into action, we're up another hill. As I said earlier, we had some Scotch lads with us, you know, and the rum ration came round during the monsoons. And when I say rum, I mean rum, lift the top of your head off. A lot of the lads didn't drink. So if them that didn't drink, they gave it to these Scotch lads. And they got a bit drunk. And they went looking for this gallon. But he was out of the way. They couldn't find him. They were after him. Whether it was just rum talking about, I don't know, but they were looking for him.
Was that because of the way he had treated you, or
he wasn't liked. He wasn't popular. No, it wasn't just me. No. Well, obviously, it wasn't just me. But to this day, but then he disappeared, and to this day, I don't know whether he left the battalion or went down sick or what. But I never saw him after that. Always remember his name, Lieutenant Gallon. And then we carried on down Burma, another sad episode. Do you believe in fate, destiny? We had to attack this big hill. It had already been attacked the previous day and had been beaten back. So it was our turn, 11th platoon. And we were to go in at 10 o'clock in the morning. But before we got to the top of the hill, before we got halfway up the hill, the RAF strapped it and gave it a right pasting. And at the same time, the artillery, when the RAF had finished strapping it, the artillery shelled it. Now, the idea was the shelling was going to stop at 10 o'clock. By that time, we were supposed to be near the top to go in. Well, as I say, 11th platoon, Sid Fields, remember his name, unfortunately, he was leading scout. I was second leading scout. Now, this artillery barrage was still going on while we were going up the hill. We started going up the hill 9:15. But Sid, he was going too slow. He was, like me, I suppose, frightened. And Sergeant Johnson, he shouted, "Get a move on, Sid. Get a move on. We're going to be nowhere near the top when this barrage finishes." Anyway, Sid, he won't go any faster at all. So I said, "Look, Sid, get back here. I'll go leading scout." I said, "You come second leading scout." I must have been mad, I don't know. So because I thought to myself, I don't want to be 100 yards below top if we have to go in. I want to be near at top. So I carried on with Sid behind me, and we got the barrage finished, and I crept up to the top on my hands and knees, and I peered over the top very carefully. Couldn't see a soul. All I could see were foxholes and a bunker, and a right good look round. "There's nobody here," said. "They've gone." Sid stood up. Bang, bang, bang. He was dead before he hit the floor. But this is the silly, sad part of it. He'd been shot by his own man. What had happened, we were going up this hill, Sid and me, and behind us, somebody had set a booby trap off, a grenade. And word got back lower down that the Japs were throwing grenades. And this major, I can remember his name, but I better not say it. This major was on loan to us, funny enough. He wasn't a West Yorkman. This, as I peered over the top and said, "There's nobody here," said, "they've gone." Sid, 2 yards behind me, about 5 yards to my left, he stood up, right on the skyline, of course. and bang, 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 and I'm not lying, he spun round, and I saw a shot, a bullet, catch him under the chin before he hit the ground. He must have been a hell of a shot, must this major. And that's what happened. Being shot by his own men.
And whereabouts was this hill?
If I remember rightly, there was three hills, and they, as I said earlier, they all had me. And I believe it was one of the three. It was Warsaw, Joseph, Cairo. And I think it was Cairo. It was well down in Burma then, you see. Anyway, our sergeant, he went mad like with his major, like, you know, but till late, right, Sid were dead. Anyway, we stayed there the night, obviously. And the next morning, we left Sid there in the slit trench. He was the only one.
So the Japanese had gone, had they?
Yeah. Yeah, they, you know, they strafed it and shelled it. Whether they'd gone before that or during that, we don't know, but there wasn't a Jap there. Well, I'll tell a lie, there were one or two dead ones. But there you say, now look, it's not so far from here. He lived from not far from here, he said. I don't understand, he was only son. Now, if I had said to Sid, I'll go leading scout. If that booby trap hadn't gone off. You see, when I came home, I know where he lived, Brig House way somewhere. I didn't know how to go see him over or not. I didn't, because if she'd have asked me how he died, what was I supposed to say? I couldn't really. That well-known name is that major, no? You'll have seen it a lot down London. Very well-known name. But I can't put that there. He'll be dead now, of course. Because, I mean, so I'm 75 and he'd be 30 to 40 then. Well, I'm assuming he'll be dead, right? But poor Sid. Another thing, I don't know where we were, but somewhere in Burma. Can you will yourself to die? Where the lad with us, right religious, same section as me. And at that time, we were up the sailor, and we had some little tents. You could just crawl two men into them. He always carried the Bible with him, did this lad. Forget his name. He'd go out on patrol with us, do his work, one threat, you know. Then when we get back to where we were dug in, Bible out, you know. Went and waked him up one morning and he was dead.
What do you think he died of?
I don't know. I think he had a Bible in his hand and he was dead. As if he'd just given the ghost up.
Did his morale seem to be low?
He should never have been in the army. He should have been a conscie, I think.
Did he not make a good soldier?
He did his duty, but he wasn't cut out to be a serviceman. I don't say I was, but
in what way was he not cut out to be though?
He was too gentle, you know. He never swore. He didn't smoke. He didn't drink. I'm not saying anything wrong about that. Once we came back off patrol or where we'd been, he kept himself to himself. He just wanted to be left alone, you know. And then we just went, they were dead. So how do you explain that? I don't know. Okay.
What other memories have you got from this time, please?
Well, after that, as I say, I forget, can't remember where we were then, but then later on, where I eventually got wounded, it was a place called Nyangashi. Don't ask me to spell it. Although I have a doodad, a citation upstairs somewhere. This village was occupied by the Japs, and it was a big village. And there again, you've got to bear in mind that when I say village, there was trees and everything growing, and all the bashes, as we call them, were on stilts for the monsoon. Anyway, the whole company approaching this village, all spread out 5 yards apart, advancing to this village. And we got to the edge of the village, and the idea was to sweep through the village, nice and steady, clearing the Japs out as we went along, till we got to the other side of the village. And this was about 10 o'clock in the morning, I believe, when we set up. Major Orsaw was the company commander, remember his name. So we set off, going through the village. We were getting shot at and we were shooting them. And eventually, it must have been about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, or perhaps later, we got right to the other side of the village. We cleared the village as we fought. So Major Orsaw said, right, that's it, dig in for the night. So at that time I was a Lance Corporal. So my section, we started digging here. And Major Orsaw said, well, it's still a bit daylight. You can have a brew up if you want, make some tea. So one of the lads in my section, he started pulling some brushwood out to make a fire from underneath one of these bashes. And damn me, when it pulled the brushwood away, who should be there but a Jap? A live Jap. Of course, this somebody on my left shouted out, I'll tell you about this later on, "Hey up, Wilkie, there's a grenade." Oh no, that wasn't that time, I beg your pardon. This Jap, anyway, we got him, shot him. So Major Orsaw said, look, obviously we've missed some. We've just time to do another sweep. Back to the other side of the village, another sweep. So we set off again, this time going under every bunker, every basher. We get to this basher, I knelt down, at that time I had a Sten gun, of all things. I knelt down on this basher, of course, a bit gloomy. Blow me, there's three of them. I let go of this Sten gun. Now, Sten gun, you press the trigger and the whole lot's gone. And I don't know how I did it this day, but I must have missed one. So I stood up, back 3 or 4 yards to change my magazine. And a voice on my left shouted, "Hey up, Wilkie! You're throwing a grenade." It was too late. It landed at my feet, and of course, blew me up. And I went, that bloody man. I changed my magazine, and that man, I got up and went forward again. And then I went down, of course, because I got it all over me, you see. But the silly part about it was, this lad on my left had watched him throw it. Now, going back, when we were in Mike Tiller, going back to Mike Tiller, we received some reinforcements. Now, these reinforcements, some of them were ex-RAF, ex-Navy. Because the war in Europe was going well, they didn't need them. Now, can you imagine putting ex-RAF and ex-Navy personnel into an infantry lot in the jungle? Absolutely ridiculous. They've done about 6 weeks basic jungle training. If that lad on the left had been one of my own lads, he'd have got him, but he just watched in front. But there you are, that's how it goes, isn't it? So that was my finish me then, you see.
Do you know what date that was?
Yeah, so May the 8th or 9th. I have the actual, I'll show you citation if you want, it's upstairs somewhere.
That's 1945, is it?
Yeah. It was either VE day or the day before or the day after.
What wounds did you have?
Well, I got most of it down my stomach, like. Obviously, with being so near, I got pieces all over my face, my arm, my lips. everything like that. But the biggest pieces seem to get in the stomach and intestines, like you see. But anyway, I was lucky in this respect, like they pulled me back. And of course, by this time it was dusk, and nowhere could they get me out. So I was laid with one or two more that had also been wounded in this bit of a shelter, waiting for the next day. I remember the somebody pumped some, was it morphine in here, with these little things, that, and then write it on your forehead. And then the next day, they came and I was lumbered away, of all things, on a jeep on a railway line, driven by Americans. And they took me and one or two more on a jeep with stretchers on them. Like they'd been adapted to carry stretchers of the VDG, and the wheels were railway wheels. They'd take the ordinary wheel off and put railway wheels on them. Of course, it must have been the same gauge as the railway. I went to a bombed out railway station at a place called War, W-A-W, War, where the mobile surgical unit was. And there they operated on me, like, got the biggest bits out of me stomach and intestine, like, left all the other bits because they weren't really doing much harm. And I lay there for 10 days on this blasted stretcher in this bombed railway station, no roof on. If it rained, it rained. And eventually they came for me and took me to an airship and flew me out. I was supposed to be going to Camilla. Unfortunately, the plane developed engine trouble or something, so it had to put down at Ramree Island. So I was there at Ramree a night, then eventually took off again and went to Camilla, where obviously I was in hospital. Like, you know, I didn't know, hospital, I don't know. 2 or 3 months, 3 or 4 months, I can't remember, to be honest.
Were you satisfied with the medical treatment you got?
Oh, yeah. You see, as I said earlier, I had false teeth. Well, of course, when they operated on me, they took my teeth out. Well, when they went on to come back to hospital, I had no teeth. Because I don't know what I'd done to them. Anyway, I was in hospital 2 or 3 months, and it was healing up nicely, like, you know. And, but I couldn't keep my food down for some reason. And the surgeon came to me, he says, "I can't understand this." He says, "It's healing up nicely." He said, "With your x-ray," he said, "with none, there's no pieces there. So what bits you have in your leg, they don't matter like they do now." He said, "Can't understand it." He said, "Have you any ideas?" What? I said, "Yeah." He said, "What's that?" I said, "If I had some damp teeth, I might be able to chew my food." Oh, son of a father. I was in a wheelchair half an hour after, down to the mobile dentist, and got some new false teeth, and that made all the difference, you see. So I was all right there, you see. So eventually, I came out of hospital, like, finished up in Calcutta again. And I rejoined my unit in Surabaya, in Java, where they were still fighting. We lost some men there. What? And war was over.
Were you in any fighting in Surabaya?
No, it was over when I got there. But what happened was, Surabaya, Java, before the war, as we all know, was the Dutch East Indies, if I remember rightly, and Netherlands East Indies. Now, when the Japs kicked the Dutch out, and the Japs occupied it, and then Japan surrendered, the Indonesians, as it's now called, in all that, what's Indonesia, they didn't want the Dutch back. They just got rid of the Japs. They didn't want the Dutch back. And so what our government did, or whoever did,